You're listening to Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us every Sunday night on Facebook Live and our YouTube channel as we talk East Carolina baseball. ECU play-by-play voice Corey Glure and others will join us as we look back at the previous week and take a look at what's ahead. Now, let's talk Pirate baseball.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Extra Innings, our final broadcast. Extra Innings brought to you by Next Level Training Center in Greenville on Wimbledon Drive. You can call them at 252-756-NEXT or there on the screen as you see, nextleveltc.com. We're with us right now, ladies and gentlemen, from the Outer Banks, back from a great trip there. Ladies and gentlemen, Kyle from LaGrange Barber, how are you?
Yeah, I'm broadcasting live from Lake Grange. I'm back from the OBX. Doing well, guys. So, unfortunately, this is our last broadcast of Extra Innings this year, which means it's ending at least one weekend too soon. So, is what it is. Weekends. Well, you know what? We would have been happy with just making it. But we'll go with at least one weekend too soon.
When you had 31 tries and you haven't been there, well, if we go there, let's finish it off and make Corey work. Speaking of extra innings, make him do a lot, more innings.
31 tries is what you said. And I'm going to comment on that later. Something Cliff said at the press conference that I'll comment on later, but I'll let you introduce the other two guys.
And there's a gentleman, the producer of our great show, and certainly I thought we had a Bubba sighting in Williamson, according to my son, Bubba Rosenbaum. How are you, man? You're on mute, my friend.
Sorry, I thought I unmuted myself. Issue there with my touch screen, but I was not in Williamson this afternoon. But right now, trying to enjoy the super regional game between Arkansas and NC State. The Wolfpack up 3-2 and three outs away from Omaha as we're here in the bottom of the ninth.
That's not too enjoyable.
All right, and let's bring in the play-by-play voice of the ECU baseball team, Corey Glure. How are you, sir?
Doing well, gentlemen. Thanks for having me here tonight yet again.
I appreciate you going, and especially since he signed Kyle, you haven't heard this. It's breaking news. He signed a big recording contract.
Yes.
Country music.
All right.
But he's still going to be able to do the baseball games. They're going to work it out around his baseball.
Corey wasn't even a big country music fan, so now that he's decided to pursue country music as a career, that sounds like about 90% of the rest of Nashville. Corey, I'm assuming you're going to put out crappy pop country.
Yeah, it's amazing
the outlaw.
Depending on where you go in that city of what you hear. Because if you go down to Broadway, it is a lot of covers and pop country stuff. But then if you find some off the beaten path places, like I was able to a few times, and you hear like some legit songwriters in Nashville perform, boy, country's gonna be really good.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I was trying to tell you a while back. The whole country scene down in Texas, Cody Jinks, Whiskey Byers, all those guys. We won't get into that right now, but yeah, there's a lot of good country music.
Well, I look forward to hearing your first album. I hope we can be there when you have your party or obviously your debut of the album. We want to be there. We'll have some pirate beverages and we'll definitely help you promote the album here on the Sports Objective.
Yeah. My first single will be Ball Four Down the Middle.
All right.
Sounds good. All right. My first single was a double. Hey.
There you go. It's going to be all baseball songs. And even you could do a cover of Center Field by John Fogerty. So anyway, Corey, disappointing, obviously, for the Pirates, obviously, this weekend with the super regional, in Nashville. Vanderbilt, we knew it was going to be a difficult task. I'm really proud of the Pirates. I know that If Cliff were on with us right now, he doesn't believe in moral victories. But I am proud of the fact that if you look back at the season, we've never done it before. Hosting three straight regionals, never done but before for the program. As a coach, he has three super regionals now with 16, 19, and 21 with the years, three out of the five attempts. I know that's not what we want to hear, but at the same time, when you look at this program, we're getting closer and closer and closer to Omaha. It's not as fast as we want it, but I felt like overall that looking back, 44 wins, regular season champions. I mean, there's a lot to be proud of for this season.
Yeah, I think that for all of us will get to that point here about looking at the totality of the season. I'm not there yet because I wish I were just disappointed that it ended this weekend, but I'm still angry at how things went this weekend. Like it just, it felt off the whole time. And so, it's still a little bit raw, frankly, with how it's one thing to lose a super regional, like, but the way those two games played out, just felt a lot was stacked against them. And that's a really rough way for this to end. So I wish it were just a super regional loss, but it's still, you know, we're 30 hours or so removed, 32 hours from when things ended, and it still just stings. It really stings how those two games unfolded.
And they just, breaking news, NC State punched their ticket to Omaha.
Just throw salt on the wound there.
I'm not. Don't kill the messenger. I was just trying to. We're talking baseball. Yeah, Johnny Robertson just put it up on our on Facebook.
And I said on Wednesday, I said this Vanderbilt matchup is the worst possible matchup for us, or really for anybody to draw. They're built for a super regional, like Corey said before the show. I told Bub I'd rather play Arkansas. I said you talk about just a terrible matchup for anybody, but particularly us. I said I'd rather play freaking Arkansas. I'd rather be in the state. And guess who won the pony? The Wolfpacks headed to Omaha.
Yeah, the frustrating thing is that I was telling people, you know, usually when you hear about the starting pitching for another team, Corey, and I'll get your comments for all the other two guys as well, is the very fact that you have guys that they're going to be drafted, really big, you know, draft picks, blah, blah, blah. This particular time, you have two guys that most likely are going to be, what, top five draft picks, not top five rounds, in the top five, and we have to play against them.
Yeah, it's the nature of the beast that the Pirates were dealt this year. That's, you know, you're going to host a regional, great, and you get out of it, but you're going to see a team that was quite literally built for a weekend like that. Yep. And they are built for a College World Series championship series too. They got to get there now. And now with Arkansas off of that side of the bracket, they're the favorite to me, because Arkansas looked far and away to be the best team. But as Kyle alluded to, matchups are everything in the super regionals. Like it just, that's everything. And NC State played with their tails on fire here and would have probably been a host team if they were selected in that first group of 20. Instead, they were the number one, two seed, and they win the Ruston regional. So they get that matchup in their favor. And then they go to Arkansas and, you know, Arkansas, for all of their strengths in the lineup, they had two, you know, decent starting pitchers and maybe the best pitcher in the nation as their bullpen guy who started today and they got to him. Matchups are everything, and the Pirates did draw the worst possible matchup here this year in a super regional. It negated their strength, which was getting base pressure on, getting multiple runners on, and doing damage that way. That doesn't happen against Rocker and Leiter. Like, it just doesn't. So what you saw is what happened, because it was – In a matchup where pitching strength versus offensive strength, pitching's almost always going to win, and that's what played out this weekend.
Corey, I thought that if we were going to win this thing, we were going to have to steal one Friday or Saturday, and then win Sunday. I thought it was going to have to go three games, and Saturday I think we had our opportunities, particularly if you know, the umpire wasn't calling things against us, and just some bad luck with, you know, trying to steal a base and not even coming close to stealing it, and just things just happen like that. I thought if we could just steal one against Rocker or Leiter, then win it in game three.
Well, that's nobody this year against Vanderbilt has started a weekend 2-0. Like, nobody has. That teams have gone 1-1, and then gone after it for a game three. They only lost three weekend series all year. But their pitching beneath those two takes a huge drop. And so, yeah, that was the framework. Was you're not going to get the first two. Steal one of those first two. And then your strength comes into play for a game three. Problem is they couldn't steal one of those first two. And you're right, there were chances there. It doesn't seem like there were many, but they had a couple. They only had multiple runners on in an inning once in those two games, and that was in game one. You talk about the base stealing thing, and you could just tell that was going to be off the table. Like, it, even when they got runners on, their catcher, C.J. Rodriguez, is terrific at catching base runners. It is almost impossible to bunt off of those pitchers. Like, what the Pirates wanted to do offensively was almost impossible against those two pitchers. No matter how you sliced it, this was not the matchup that the Pirates were going to have an advantage in. And it's a shame, because against almost any other team in this super regional, of the other 14 that were around, their advantages play pretty dang well, but yep, not against this team.
Yeah, something else I said about playing Vandy, if you're going to have to play them, I'd rather play them in a regional, because if you play them in a regional and they beat you one game, you end up in a loser's bracket, you're going to end up in a situation like Georgia Tech, and Georgia Tech almost beat them out of the loser's bracket Sunday night, took them to extra innings. I really believe had Tech won that game, you know, Vanderbilt's bullpen is pretty untested. So now if you're playing them on Monday and now they're playing game number four, what do they have left in terms of experience pitching? So, you know, had Georgia Tech managed to beat them last Sunday night, we might have been hosting the Yellow Jackets this weekend. It's funny how things can change so easily. We just don't catch any breaks with this round, with the Super Regional round. You look what's going on down in Columbia with Dallas Baptist and Virginia, two teams that, you know, neither one was the number one seed, and they end up playing in a regional, a Super Regional against each other. That never happens to us. Maybe one year it will. You know, I think maybe even though we hate NC State, we can look at them as a good example of, we don't have to host a Super Regional to win it. We just need to catch some breaks. We need somebody to blow their wad on Friday like Arkansas did, and to play flat the rest of the weekend. You know, things happen. You know, we came so close to 16. One thing I heard Cliff say during the press conference, and it kind of struck me. He said, you know, looking back at it, he's always picture us, you know, going to Omaha after winning the Super Regional in Greenville. But, you know, the only time we've got to host was in 01, and that was in Kinston. And he was a part of that team as a player. But, you know, and I think the fans sometimes look at that too big. You know, Dave said 31 times. This particular ball team has only went to one Super Regional. The guys that were seniors have been to two or three. They ain't got nothing to do with 01. They ain't got nothing to do with 04. No. They ain't got nothing to do with 09. And the fans look at it as one big picture. And Cliff probably does too, being a former player, as he alluded to in the press conference. But these guys went 0-1 for one Super Regional. And next year's team, that'll be their first chance to go to a World Series, because every team is different and every team is exactly one season old.
Yeah, let me be clear on what I was getting at with 31 times. I look at it completely different.
Sure, you look at media.
No. I'm saying, what I'm saying about it is, when I say as a whole, most of the media looks at it as a negative. I look at it as a storied program. There would be a lot of programs that wish they could have made it, I mean, many times. And the other thing, too, is I don't think, I think this program has grown a lot, even in the last 20 years, where I don't know that we ever believed we could go to Omaha until Coach Claire, maybe we do. But Coach LeClaire really brought that to the spotlight. And then with the Super Regionals, I mean, six times we've been there. State, I think, has only been there five times in a Super Regional, right? I mean, my memory serves me right. I think that's
the only but this is two trips to Omaha, so that's kind of the problem. But, you know, it is.
But going back, that's what I'm saying, is going back to your point, it's not like we've been to – it's not like we've been to 31 Super Regionals. You know, we've had a lot of regionals, and we've been to Super Regionals six times. So that's my point. And we've struggled matchups. Another thing too is 19. We had nothing left in the tank. We go over to Louisville. Corey, the press box was wonderful there in Louisville. With things leaking all over your equipment, I mean, if you're a broadcaster, you're having a hard enough time with trying to think of everything to say and all that. You've got that in your mind. The last thing you want to worry about is, oh my God, I might not have equipment to make it through the third or fourth inning. All the stuff there, and we just couldn't put up runs or anything. And then I felt like with Vandy, we played them extremely well. And I'm disappointed we lost. Obviously hurt we lost. However, I see the program. I want to get you guys' opinion. I see the program growing big time.
I think most people do, Dave. I think most people do.
No, yeah, I mean, that, I know we're all hurt.
Question like that. That's not. I think the immediacy of this weekend is still sitting with many of us, myself included. Like, the trajectory of what this program is set. I mean, it's third straight regional host, second straight super regional. Like, I mean, that we know what the program is. I think what's challenging, at least from where I sit, over this past weekend to try and get through, was that a lot of what Kyle was just talking about, the breaks just don't seem to be coming, and you can't not talk about it without sounding like a sore loser, and that's a shame. But you look at, I mean, this team, this program has done so much properly to be in a position to be in Omaha, but it just seems like draws here, breaks here, bounces there, just aren't working out. And that's the sport. That's something Cliff Godwin talks about a lot. He talked about it after the game Saturday, and he broke down during that. And you know how it means more to him than anybody. It seems like whatever the Pirates do, there's always still an uphill sledding that they need to find a way to figure out how to manage. But with this weekend, it just felt like the toboggan got ripped out from underneath them. And they had no shot to get up that hill. You know, it's one thing to see the best two pitchers in the country that throw mid to high 90s fastballs and devastating sliders. Another thing to see them at 11 a.m. Like, it's stuff like that where you just think about that. And you go, oh, well, in 19, they had the first two games of Friday and Saturday as well. And then they had the first two games this year as well because they're not a TV draw. But on Friday, Gavin Williams was the name around college baseball because he got a national stage and he pitched his ass off in what was his final game as a Pirate. It's stuff like that that it just seems like you're always fighting resistance against. And I talk about this stuff because I know this is something that, you know, Cliff Godwin would love to be saying stuff like this, but the NCAA would come after him if he did. So it's stuff that you got to keep talking about. You got to keep saying loudly because that's the way it gets changed. If East Carolina as a number 5 RPI is seated 10th, like in 2019, mm-hmm. or if East Carolina is seated 13th, but is matched up against the best two pitchers in the country, the best two pitcher, best 1-2 punch, maybe in 15 years in a super regional this year, all of this stuff keeps building up and snowballing. And the only way to make sure it gets the attention that it deserves is to do stuff like this. Now, I'm not saying there's something amiss here, but it's hard not to look at the last couple of years and with what's happened with where people have decided East Carolina baseball should belong in this postseason and say, this just isn't right. Like, this program is one of the best in the country, and it just seems like every possibility they're getting slighted. And so that's – and then you boil down to the two games, and – I despise talking about balls and strikes. I hate it. But it's completely impossible to not come out of that series and say, what the hell was that? Like, what the hell happened there? I mean, I've never seen that before.
Saturday was bad.
Saturday was horrific. Like, it's the worst strike zone I've ever seen. And Friday wasn't much better. So, and the fact that the Pirates still nearly were in a position to win those two games is mind-blowing because, like, it doesn't make sense, like, how that happened. Those two pitchers do not need the assistance that they got.
Yep.
And so you either have very bad people calling these games or things I don't want to think about there. But whatever happened cannot get lost in the shuffle there. That was inexcusable. To call a pitch 8 inches off the plate and 4 inches below the knees, a strike three looking. But then Cam's Colmore's last pitch as a Pirate is ball four right at the belt down the middle to bring in a run. Like, something's not right. And that's why, you know, this year on top of 19, it just feels like it's all just kind of built to a head here. It's like, this program doesn't deserve what's been built to them. Like, they've done everything properly here. And Vanderbilt's through for another College World Series that they're going to take for granted. And it's just stuff like that that you just say, like, what more can be done here? Like, it's really frustrating.
Well, I'll tell you what you can do. I'll tell you what you can do for all the umpires out there. When you do that mess, you're going to lose your jobs because they're not going to have umpires anymore. They're going to have, you know, unfortunately, they'll have robots or different things. I know there's stuff they're working on. Not that I want that, but that's where we're headed.
Job, you shouldn't have a job. Like, it's just, that's the way it is. And but the problem is that's not the accountability that's going to work here. Like, what's done is done.
Corey, have you heard, you know, and this is probably a better question to ask the administration. Is Cliff asking John, is in John Gilbert, to reach out to the NCAA, file complaints like you do in conference about these calls, bring it to somebody's attention, get some clarity on why so many balls and strikes were called incorrectly?
I don't know if they're reaching out about that. There were a couple things that were going on, like Vanderbilt was showing replays on the video board there, mm-hmm. which the NCAA yeah. said was not allowable in the Greenville Regional. Like, I think there, like, Cliff Godwin had to do post-game press conferences in front of the Vanderbilt backdrop, and we were told that was a no-go here in Greenville for our regional. Like, stuff like that, I think they're trying to make the NCAA aware of. When it comes to what happened that weekend, in terms of the strike zone, I don't know if that's going anywhere. I know Cliff Godwin cannot say anything really about that. I know he wants to. I don't know if the school will be addressing that in some capacity. I don't know how they would address that.
You contact the NCAA.
I guess that would be it, which sounds pretty simple. I don't know if they're going down that path or not.
I would. I mean, it happens in conference play. You know, back in football season when we got hosed in Tulsa, Gilbert, you know, we contacted the conference about the officiated, and the conference released a statement noting that they made a mistake and it cost East Carolina the ball game. Now, they didn't credit us with a victory, but at least they had to acknowledge their mistakes, and the officials, I'm sure, were reprimanded in some way. I would, if it doesn't, look, it's not going to do any harm. You got to stand up for you. You got to stand up for your team and your coaches. There's only so much Cliff can do. So, you know, if I was John, I would with the other things. And whether anybody was, you know, I don't think anybody was paid any money to screw the Pirates.
No.
I think it was the national champions, the defending national champions, with the two best, arguably the two best pitchers in the nation. And they got every benefit they possibly could because they wanted to see the national champions from the SEC go to the World Series again and not East Carolina. And unfortunately, that's kind of the world we live in. And I think when we do make it to Omaha, I think one of two things is going to happen. I think we're going to be so damn good, we're going to have to host a Super Regional, and we're going to bash our way through it. It's not even going to be close. Or something like 16 is going to happen. Where it's going to be a year we didn't expect to go, and we're going to slip in, and of all years, this is the year we went to Omaha.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I want to ask you guys, too, is the very fact of you're talking about the strikes on, and you watch the two guys. It just makes you wonder. I will say this. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but when you have two guys that are going to probably go, I was telling Corey pre-show, their top five guys, not the typical rounds, you know, a handful of rounds, they're, you know, the two great pitchers, they're top five guys. You don't think ESPN wants those guys to be in the College World Series and they can say, these are future major leaguers, and well, you know, like that, they want those two guys to be in there. So even though it's maybe not an attempt, like a conceited effort, they're still human as far as balls and strikes. And
well, you know what, you know, I kind of, oh my gosh, to, yeah, you know what I kind of equated to it, when you watch an NBA game, and superstars get more foul calls. Like that's kind of what it felt like. Where it's not necessarily by design, nothing set beforehand, but it's kind of seeing who's in front of you and looking at their stuff and getting kind of caught up with it. Like there's no denying the stuff that Rocker and Leiter have. Like, and so when a slider starts on the outside corner to a righty, but then misses off the plate, well, you see the slider starting in the zone and that works. Like it's stuff like that where it's kind of a whoa thing. And maybe it surprises an umpire to the point where they're making calls off the plate, like we saw in those two games. What I don't get is missing clear strikes. Like that, it's two sides of the same coin with Wiz and Hunt in his final batter on Saturday, where I think it was the pitch that was called ball three was right in the zone, like right there. And then he walked the next guy and that was the end of his outing. And then the Colmore one is the obvious one. It's just like, I don't think there's malfeasance here, but there is some incompetence. Like it played out in a way that I've never seen before in calling baseball.
And it could be malfeasance. It could it could be simply that the umpire wanted Vandy to win because people are fans of somebody and everybody. I mean, sometimes, you know, you like people and it could have been intentional just because he's a Vandy fan.
Hey, Corey, how about the fact that the strangest thing for me, and help me understand, I know I listen to you guys and I had it on mute on the TV, but what was going on? To me, speaking of strange, since we're on that topic, having those pagers, I said, what is this, the 1980s? Your pagers are going off? What's going on here that you're standing right beside Wiz and Hunt? You're talking to, you know, the starting pitcher, and then because the pagers go off, then they have to go to something that's not even a replay. I mean, those kind of things, I'm sorry, should not happen. Is that, I'm wrong.
I think that was more of a time issue because they're usually in these games, there is a person that stands in the field and notifies umpires when a commercial is ending for television. But those aren't around this year due to COVID protocols. And so the umpires are keeping time in between half innings. And I think there was just a confusion, like someone didn't start the clock. And so that was the confusion there. That I didn't get that explained. It was very strange. I've never seen that before, but that's the best I could figure out what happened there.
Okay. It was really weird. And I know Cliff had every right to, you know, you're like, it's messing up. It just seemed like that was that. What I'm trying to say is that.
Yeah. It was Carson warming up on the mound. And so then he had to stop.
And then they wouldn't let him. Yeah. And then they wouldn't let, wasn't it Gavin?
Gavin throw tosses during a replay. Yeah.
I heard you talk about that, and I was going, you know, guys, it's like the video replays on the board. There's all this kind of stuff. And, again, my ultimate question is when will we get the respect? I guess does that simply mean that going back to our season, do we need to – I was asking the guys, should we have won three or four more games where we would have a higher seed, where we possibly would be hosting a Super Regional and we wouldn't see Vandy to the College World Series? I mean, I'm just throwing it out there because, like, what does it take to not have that kind of stuff happen, you know, where, in other words, you have the better, I don't know, a better matchup.
I think almost anybody would have been a better matchup. I don't, you know, you win three or four more games and maybe you get a chance to host, but the problem with Vandy is it's not even just the matchup. The matchup's bad enough because it's a horrible matchup for us. It's really a horrible matchup for anybody, particularly us, but also they're defending national champions. So they're going to get every damn benefit that they possibly can. Let's say Texas Tech, since we've been there before. Had we went to the Lubbock Regional and we were playing out at Texas Tech, yeah, I don't remember these problems at Texas Tech. We just lost the damn regional, Super Regional rather. So it's almost there's certain programs that are going to get the benefit of the doubt. Vanderbilt is one of them. I would imagine somebody like LSU would be another. It's
SEC.
And it's like I said, if you go to Texas Tech, for example, or Arizona, or you pick a school, even if we weren't hosting, we'd have been much better off, not only from a matchup standpoint, but from a bias standpoint, in my opinion.
the SEC guys. Remember the 97 Alabama game down at Legion Field?
Yeah, 98 when we lost.
98, I'm sorry.
23-22 or whatever.
Yeah, you know, you mean where they got credited with a timeout they didn't have. And Jesus
telling Christ. The SEC, baby. Yeah, the SEC, I'm telling you. When you have to fight a conference, they're not going to – and you're playing, again, on their home field. You're playing against two top five draft picks, and yes, they're good. Like Corey said, they didn't even need to have. They didn't even. That's my thing. Going back to what you were saying earlier, Corey, that bothered me, and you already said it, but it was bothering me watching those games. Is that it's not like that East Carolina had like an advantage in the pitching, so we got to help Vandy out here when those guys are. I mean, when is that going to happen again? To have two top trot, not guys that are going the first couple rounds. They're going to go in the first few picks. That's how good they are.
All right.
Well, and, they didn't need any help, like you said.
To be fair, especially yesterday is Saturday, right? Yeah. There were a good number of pitches that Leiter threw in the zone that were also called balls. Like the strike zone was crazy yesterday. It just seemed as though more misses were happening against Carson and against the Pirate bullpen than against Leiter and Maldonado, who came out for Vanderbilt. And then the day before, Rocker's slider got some pitches off the plate that were called strikes. And Gavin struck out 13. Like, he certainly had, took some advantage of a little bit of a wider zone, but there was a good curveball that was called a ball to start off one at bat in the middle of that game. Like, it's just things that you don't quite understand how they get missed. That happened and just kept stacking up, especially yesterday, to where, like, my job's to speak, and I was left speechless towards the end of that game. Like, I think I even said, I don't know what to say anymore. Like, it blew my mind. And when my phone's blowing up from people who I haven't heard from in a long time saying, what is going on here? Like, what is with this strike zone? And I know the ESPN guys were talking about it. And the umpire had a camera on his helmet, so you could see like there's no hiding from it, and it just kept on going, and I just don't know. It is brutal that's the way this ended. Like, it's one thing to lose. It's another thing to lose like that.
It's really hard. And like 2019, is easier to accept because Louisville was good, but we just didn't.
We were gassed. We were not the same team in that Super Regional 19 that we were for that regional run. Like, they were out of steam. And once they knew that we're playing at 12 noon on Friday, and they're like, we won't be there. I mean, we can't visit. Like, we'll be there physically, but we're not there. And what happened? They got beat by the better team that weekend. Vanderbilt talent wise is better than East Carolina, and they might have still gone 2-0 this weekend. But it just felt like whenever there was even a glimmer of an opportunity for the Pirates to try and get something going on either side, it got taken away in some respect, and that's hard to swallow.
Corey, what question I have for you guys? Go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to ask you guys this. I'm sorry, Kyle. And then we got some comments from the viewers too. But I want to ask you guys, do you think – I was thinking about this over the last couple of days. Would we be at an advantage to play – I know we've done Ole Miss in the past. Would we have an advantage to play a Vandy, not for RPI, but for the fact of – it would just be interesting to see, would we get better calls in the regular season versus in that moment in the Super Regional? I'm just curious about that. I know I have strange thoughts that are going through my mind. Would it be any different? Would it be any better?
Yeah, I don't know if that matters, because the 19 team played, heavyweights. They went out to UCLA. They played Ole Miss and Mississippi State that year. And I don't think that matters.
I was going to ask Corey and Bubba Dave, if you've had a chance to watch the whole press conference. I don't know who took part. I don't think Bubba, you or Dave, either one took part yesterday. But I watched it in replay on YouTube. I've never that's right up there with one of the most emotional press conferences I've ever seen in my life. Coach Godwin was emotional. He had players crying. It was tough to watch. Yet you need to go watch it. If you're a Pirate fan and you haven't watched that press conference, it's tough to watch, but you really need to go watch it.
Yeah, you're bang on. Like, it was really hard to watch and to see, Cliff is very emotional about this team, and especially after Saturday, it was very raw, and it still is for him. But to see, Cam and Matt and Tyler sitting there, and
Tyler was a dang mess. That was
pitiful. And, Tyler, I think at one question asked him, he didn't pitch in this super regional, and so he didn't get one more chance to get out there as a Pirate. He had a terrific swan song in the regional final. But you talk about three guys that have had some extremely high highs for this program and also have struggled. I mean, they have been through it all, whether it's injuries or ineffectiveness or both. Those three, they all chose to come back. They could have left for one more shot at this, and to get this close again and not be able to get there, it breaks your heart. Like, it really does. And boy, when we landed last night, when the charter got in last night, I said goodbye to, some of the guys, the ones that we know are going to get drafted, Gavin, Connor, Francisco, those guys. But then to say goodbye to those three, and I pulled Tyler aside, and I called his games in high school. I've called his for about 7 years. Wow. I've called him. I've called, football and basketball in high school, and then 5 years of baseball with him here. And he said, it's been a long time. And I said, you broke my heart today, kid, but I can't wait to see what you do next. Like, it's things like that, that when you see, games like this weekend play out, the finality of it hits you so hard when it comes to an end. And for those three, I can't think of just three better guys that have been through this program and now led this program this year. Without those three, forget about what they were on the field. Without those three, they're not in Nashville this weekend. Like, I have no idea. They're not playing this weekend. Like, it's like what those three did to help mold this team to where they got to this year is irreplaceable. And to see them sign off yesterday was rough. It was really, really rough. But that's the nature of this. That's college sports, and it's rare to get a relationship with guys like this and have them around for a third of their lives, like those three were here at East Carolina. It's a hard watch, and it was hard to kind of say goodbye to them yesterday. That's what they've been to this program.
Like you're saying, Corey, the human element of it, and Cliff Godwin getting emotional at the press conference, as well as with Brian Bailey in a little interview he did with him. And, obviously guys have plenty of reasons to want to come play for East Carolina, but if they need another, seeing Coach Godwin and just how much he values those relationships, you don't get that at every school, and some you do, some you don't. But, Cliff, when you hear him saying, Omaha doesn't matter right now, my guys are hurting, that certainly hit you.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the worst kept secrets about Cliff Godwin is that inside that kind of gruff exterior he shows, especially to you guys, and sometimes me as well, there's a really, really heartfelt, emotional guy in there. And it comes out quite a bit. That there's a reason why this program now is at a place where former players come back all the time and are around the team. Chris Holbo was at the games this weekend in Nashville. Like, he hasn't been around since 2018. I mean, he's rehabbing another injury, but he was at the games this weekend in Nashville. Parker Lamb was there, like, from the 2016 team. What Cliff Godwin has done with this program. It's not a baseball team. It's a family. Like, and that can get mocked a lot, like that term in this sport. And a lot of people, you know, especially in this area, I think, you know, laugh when they hear it when it comes to Carolina basketball. But you hear it a lot with that. What Cliff Godwin has done here is built a program that those who have left want to be back around with and always want to be a part of. Think about Turner Brown this year. Like, four-year starting shortstop, gets drafted, doesn't work out the Rockies, and he's back this year coaching. Like, it's just, like, stuff like that have set this program apart. And so that's why, you know, this team, this program has done everything right. They haven't gotten to the promised land, as Matt Bridges said in the postgame on Saturday. But for Cliff, who desperately wants to get there with this team and wants to bring that jersey there, that's not the end goal. Like, he's built a place now where everyone is still a part of this program. And that's what he wanted to build. He said earlier last week, Omaha is a lifestyle, not a destination. And, you know, people might smirk at that a little bit, but this program has built that here. They have built a College World Series lifestyle around East Carolina baseball, and that's Cliff at the center of it. So it's the people first. It's the player second here. And that's why it's when he's asked about missing Omaha, that's not on his mind. Like, it's, he's saying goodbye to those three guys who's on the table next to him. He's saying goodbye to maybe the best pitcher to ever throw here, at least for a season. One of the best second basemen to ever do it here for a season. Going to say goodbye to his first baseman, maybe his center fielder, and a couple of guys, some veterans who may not come back. Like, we don't know what things are going to look like next year for some of these fourth year guys. That's what's on his mind. Like, he had the players over to his house today, like, it just to hang out and have one last get together before they all go off to summer ball. Like, that's what this program is. Be bummed that we're not the College World Series this year, but understand that, you know, the trajectory, as you mentioned before, Dave, of this program is so sky high because of how Cliff Godwin has invested in the kids that he's brought in and the staff that he's brought in from the very start.
Yeah, Bubba, Gordy, I know we had. You brought up the team going over to Coach's house. I saw a tweet from Coach, a nice belly flop, really more of a chest flop from Riley Johnson. That was impressive.
Yeah, but he's got to have some gymnast background with the backflips he's been doing, and then that. I never got a chance to. You know, maybe I'll be able to snag him here in a little bit before he heads off to wherever he's going. Like, you're going to be playing, but yeah, there's an acrobat in there, except for today, apparently.
But earlier I was going to throw this up when we were talking about, you know, obviously Coach can't say so much about the balls and strikes, but when he was asked about it, I believe it was Stephen Igo of Voice of Colors at yesterday's press conference, he said, Coach Godwin can't talk about that, so I just tell everybody to go back and watch the game. It's on video. I know one thing, when Cam Colmore, who's a sixth-year senior, says that 3-1 pitch is right down the middle, I trust that guy. He's seen a lot of balls thrown. So I thought that was a perfect way to handle it. You know, get your point across without getting yourself in trouble.
And it was a fastball. Like, how do you miss that? Like, how do you miss that? It was a fastball.
Right, yeah. Well, what happens? What happens if he says, hey, these officials suck nuts? And they need to, damn it, we'll chip in and pay his fine.
I think Pirate Nation would put together like a GoFundMe to help that out.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do it.
The sense.
And by the way, you could, yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, if he gets that fine, would be I'll give that would be a memorable for Saturday to that fine.
Yeah, no doubt.
Hey, that would be a memorable game. That would be legendary. That would be right up there with some of the Bobby Knight stuff, you know, you see like when he talks about game face or any of the, that stuff. But that would be definitely unforgettable for sure. But another thing too about it, guys, real quick, and I know we're going to this comments. If you have a comment that you want to make, one thing I want to say too for Pirate Nation, tell everybody how you feel about this team. I know there are a lot of people that have been putting stuff on social media that was very nice. So if you're watching right now, we have some people that Bubba, I know that I'm going to chime in. So I know you got some comments over there from Facebook and other places, right?
Yeah, one of the plays that we have not really discussed, but how Vanderbilt got its first run. Obviously, they laid down an excellent drag bunt, and I know Cliff came out to talk to the plate umpire about it. The left-handed batter, his left foot was well out of the box, probably a foot out of the box. So, Corey, what, if anything, did you hear about that?
Frankly, I didn't hear anything from the team about that. I was a little bit, when it happened live, I didn't catch it just naturally from my angle, just behind the plate. I wasn't able to tell that he was out of the box, so I was initially kind of confused as to what happened. And it's not reviewable, and I think if that had been a play available, they would have seen that, and that, you know, that's not allowed. Like, that is illegal. Yeah, I think of all the things that kind of built up over the course of the weekend in terms of some discrepancies with calls, that one might have gotten lost a little bit in the shuffle. I know fans picked up on it pretty quick, and I did see it on social media. There wasn't much talk about it from the team.
Well, why is that not a reviewable play, Corey?
You're asking the wrong person about that.
But that's the whole point.
It was a scoring play.
There's a boundary call there that seems like it would be easily reviewable. The only thing would be probably a camera angle. To me, there's not a ton of difference there as to like fair foul, because you have something to look at physically, exactly. It's not subjective. But that's for the NCAA rules committee.
But if you know that if you're Vanderbilt and you know that they can't review it, then you're going to do whatever you want to do, right? I mean, or whatever team it is.
I don't think he intended to leave in the box early. Yeah. Like, I'll say that. But, I mean, it was a break that worked out for him. Like, that should not have been a bunt single because he was out of the box when he made contact. But it's not reviewable, and it wasn't called in the field. And so they took advantage, and they scored a run off of it.
And in a super regional like that, where pitching's at such a premium, and 2-0 and 4-1, everything's magnified. Any type of base runner, any type of advancement of base runners, it sticks out like a sore thumb. And
yeah, one thing that we haven't talked about, and we should, is that when push comes to shove, Vanderbilt did capitalize and their opportunities more than we did this weekend. Now, we talked a lot about the strike zone, and that's fair, and I will continue to beat that drum until I'm blue in the face. But Vanderbilt had chances. They put some more runners on, and they were able to take advantage of those. That's what their good teams are able to do, championship teams are able to do. Yes, they got breaks. They got plenty of breaks. But they took them, and they scored off of them. And that's why we're talking about a loss here as well.
Yeah, to your point, Corey, I know yesterday's all four runs were two out RBIs.
Yeah, I mean, there was the fifth inning when they scored a pair off of Bridges, but what set that up was a controversial walk to end Carson Wisenhunt's day, and look at what happened. Hey, that came around to score. And then the ninth inning, which, I mean, was a punctuation to everything in those two games in Nashville, where it shouldn't have been. Who knows if that 3-1 pitch is called a strike, Cam might still walk in that run. Like, we don't know, but it was called a ball, even though it punched a hole in the middle of the zone. But that was after Bradfield's double, and that made it a 3-1 game. Like, it's just Vanderbilt got gifts, and they were happy to accept them, and they took advantage of them. Chances that we had. We only had multiple runners on in one inning in two games.
Yeah.
We couldn't do anything with it. There are many reasons as to why that happened.
And with Bridgie, he had a slider maybe that, it looked like maybe strike three, if I'm not mistaken. But it seems like, we could have gotten out of that and then don't get the call, and then, like you said, to Vandy's credit, they capitalize on it, and with the 2-run single.
Yeah, to be honest, that at bat, is kind of foggy in my memory bank as to how that one transpired. I know it was a fastball that Carter Young hit to drive in a pair, but there were enough questions throughout those two games to fill a sizable portfolio if the school is thinking about it. Like, it just, that's what overshadowed this weekend to me. And maybe there were one or two in that Matt Bridges at bat to Young that could also be thrown in there. But when push comes to shove, there's a lot to look back on that scratches your head.
One thing that I wanted to mention, and I don't know how many other people feel this way, but and it's not just this year. I've always kind of felt this way. I don't like the setup with the regionals and the super regionals, and you're paired with an opponent. Like, we knew we were going to play Vanderbilt or the winner of the Vanderbilt regional all along. I've always been in favor of reseeding after the regionals. In other words, South Florida would have been playing Arkansas. I don't know who we would have been playing. It would have been Vandy. South Florida or Dallas Baptist and Virginia would not have been playing each other. They'd have both been playing, you know, somebody that was hosting this weekend. To me, that would be a lot more fair to reseed after the regionals, and the lowest rated team left plays the highest rated team and on down one.
Yeah, I think, and you know, by this point, the top 16 are obviously seeded, but also the two seeds are seeded. Like, yep. they're seeded in order as well. So at least the top 32 teams are seeded in some capacity, because we were the 13 seed. And so Charlotte was like the fourth highest two seed. Like, that's how that lines up.
Yep.
The three seeds are usually at larges, last teams in, that sort of thing. And then the four seeds are usually the one bid leagues. But or in a case like South Florida, where they were, you know, a game over 500 but won the tournament. I've been a proponent for a while now of seeding the entire tournament 1 through 64, because they kind of already try to do that to try and balance the RPIs out for the four teams in a regional, try and make it as level as possible between the 16. So the number one overall seed will get the last two seed, but get the top three seed and then the last four. Like, that's kind of how they try to do it. This year, there are more regional four seeds. I think they were trying to limit travel due to COVID reasons for some of the smaller schools. But a seeding of 1 through 64, would, I think, kind of go down the line of what you're looking at here, Kyle. What the NCAA will respond with is, they don't do it for basketball, and that actually makes them money. So why would they do it for this?
Different animals.
To make it fair, well, my response would be, do they really want that?
Yeah. Well, it should be, and it's a different animal with basketball. In my response to the NCAA, if they say we don't do it with basketball, I would say, well, then let's play on neutral sites for regionals and super regionals, because you're giving teams home field advantages and putting teams at disadvantages that don't deserve to be.
Yeah, that's been a sticking point for a while, especially for Cliff, because the regional this year had the Pirates lost to Maryland on Sunday night and went to a game seven. Maryland would have been the home team for game seven.
Yeah.
Because the way it worked out, they try and make everyone the home team at least once in a regional. But if everyone's the home team the same number of times, by the time game seven hits, then it goes, the team that has been the road team the least in a regional would be the road team for that one. So that would have played in, because ECU was only the road team once in their three games. Maryland was the road team twice in their four. And so that would have made ECU the road team in the game seven of a regional they were hosting. Where, I mean, that happened to Oregon. They lost to LSU. Old Dominion, who was the number one in Columbia, they were the road team against Virginia. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like what's the – it kind of goes to, you know, the closest this program has gotten to Omaha was when they came out of Charlottesville as a three seed.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to work this whole season to be able to host a regional and then not be able to be home team in the most important game of the year, then what's the point of having it at home? like just put sites up for bid, like basketball. That's exactly what they should do if they're trying to make this all balance out.
Exactly.
You know, the Pirates were the home team in game two in Nashville. Why? Like Nashville was the high, or Vanderbilt was the higher seed. They should be the home team the whole weekend. Like it's stuff like that, that, you know, if you want to make it a neutral site event, then make it a neutral site event. Like you have the capability of doing that, and people at schools would bid to host this stuff. So just do that. Like instead of creating all these convoluted tiebreakers for, well, here's why the 3 seed Maryland should be the home team in the game 7 of the regional instead of the number 13 overall seed. It's stuff like that that just that's baffling.
Or Corey, just do what you and I were just talking about: combine it, seed it 1 through 64, and then do your super regional matchups based on seeding after the regionals are played. It's not that hard.
Correct.
Corey, we had a question from Johnny Robertson. He said, does anyone know if Bryson's shoulder was healthy in Nashville, or was he playing with some pain?
He looked, I mean, I would imagine it's still painful for him. He didn't come out of either of those games early. Or did he? He might have come out of Saturday's early. I don't have my book in front of me. But, yeah, he wasn't 100% yet, but he was still at the point where you weren't pulling him out of the game unless, like, he could not swing. Like, it's with what he did, especially the last half of this year, and I hope he winds up getting his name called in July here. I think he played well enough down the stretch to sneak into the draft, and we know the skill set's there. I think what was really impressive to see how Bryson evolved throughout his 4 years, assuming this is it for him, really came to light when this injury happened, and that you weren't keeping him off the field. Like, I mean, he was determined to play, and, you know, now I think of it, I think he did leave midway through in the Saturday game against Leiter. He looked at a couple strikes. And so, yeah, he might have just been, like, it might have not been there. It might have still been wonky for him, but I think you can't help but commend just the toughness he showed with a pretty well hyperextended shoulder to close out this year. And if that's it for him as a Pirate, he certainly left a mark in that Charlotte game, I'll tell you that. And then just what he'll be one of the more talented players to ever come through this program. And I think the last 6-7 weeks of the year showed that.
Bubba Grant chimes in saying that, in his opinion, Rodriguez, the catcher, was their MVP. I know he had multiple hits, and then, you know, he threw out at least 2 base runners in Connor Norby and Lane Hoover. I think the one with Hoover was a hit and run, if I recall correctly, yesterday. But and he also mentioned his framing of pitches with some of those calls going their way. But in addition to Rodriguez, you know, Javier Baez, and also
that's the big one. Yeah,
yeah, you had Baez, and he was making his 3rd or 4th, maybe 4th and 5th starts of the season. Just it's amazing. You know, yeah. And the majority of his damage has been done in the postseason after, you know, not starting in the regular season.
Yeah, he had 14 at bats coming into the Supers, and so I think it was the scouting report's not deep on him. It was the first year for him at Vanderbilt. He's a rare JUCO guy that's coming to Vanderbilt. Right, yeah. And so, like, he was on, I think, 5 times across the weekend. And he drove in the game's first run on Friday. He scored a run. I mean, he was just kind of all over the place. He has good speed, and he caused some mischief with that. So, yeah, I think, you know, Rodriguez – I love the framing pitches thing, by the way. He didn't need to do much framing. I'll say that. But yeah, Rodriguez was key. We knew heading in he could cut down base runners, and that's why you kind of looked at things and you said, well, the Pirates are going to have to probably almost abandon ship a little bit on that particular element of their offensive game, the hit and run, moving runners over, because you're not going to be able to make all the contact you want on Rocker or Leiter to at least protect runners, as we saw Saturday when Cadell missed a fastball and Hoover was dead. you also can't really get bunts down off of those two. And so, like, that element was just taken away, and then they couldn't string hits together. Rodriguez, we knew, had an arm, and he showed it in the rare times he actually had to show it. But he, at the bottom, along with Vass, I mean, the Pirates did a great job on, in my mind, Bradfield Jr. at the top of the order. He swiped a run in on Friday to make it 2-0. But I thought they did a bang-up job on him. And then, you know, Keegan, Young, you know, the guys at the middle of that order that can change things with one swing of the bat. You know, I know Young drove in a pair of runs on Saturday, but they really held them at bay. Like, they held a very good lineup down. And, you know, that gets lost here, too, with everything we're talking about. Pirate pitching had an unbelievable weekend. And, you know, did they get a little bit of a good strike zone at times? Yeah, not nearly as much as Vanderbilt, but they did. But they pitched their asses off. And it was great to see that. They matched Vanderbilt pitch for pitch. It was just pitches that were bought that turned out to be a big difference.
That's something I was – sorry to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, it's fine.
That's something I was telling Dave and the guys earlier today, you know, just from the standpoint of, like you're saying, it gets overshadowed a bit. And, you know, the Pirate pitching and defense, I think Vandy hit just over 200 in those two ball games. And
they had 10 hits,
yeah,
I think, by the final count of those two games.
Yeah, and zero errors by the Pirates. And so,
I think it's important. I think, you know, there'll be times, whether it's this show and we're already over an hour here, it looks like, or just moving forward, when you start looking at 2022, Carson Wisenhunt was great Saturday. Like, he was great. And he left in the fifth because I think Cliff was worried about walked back-to-back hitters. He got squeezed on that last hitter. And he was worried about, all right, this is super regional. He's still a freshman. He has gotten rattled at times. And so let's get him out before things maybe go haywire here. And that's why you bring in the sixth-year senior. I thought that was one of his best outings of the year. And so you're talking about that. He's going to be your number one next year. And for that to kind of, especially rebounding after his regional start against Norfolk State, which was not his greatest. He was matching lighter the whole way. And so to get that kind of as a jump start into what he might be as a Friday guy in 2022, don't lose sight of what he did over that game as well, because we know he's got the goods and he was able to showcase that. And it's been a little while since he was able to showcase that. He had looked kind of off since he returned from his arm soreness injury. That was the stuff we heard so much about with Carson Wisenhunt. That's a guy we saw at the start of the year as well. And it wasn't a long outing, but it was a really special one. And so heading into 2022, that's your ace. And the Pirates have something very, very good there.
Wait a minute, Dave. 10 hits, no errors. If a little birdie landed on your shoulder in February and said, all right, I'm going to tell you this, guys. The Pirates and the Super Regionals, through the whole Super Regionals, are going to give up 10 hits and have zero errors. We would think we would be in Omaha right now.
But five hits across two games offensively is the counter.
Yeah, the Pirates were 5 out of 56 and had 11 base runners in the two games and still had a chance, really, right there in both games because of the pitching and defense.
Yeah, I mean it's incredible when you look at that. You give up 10 hits and no errors and you lose both games. I mean that's brutal.
Well, and the fact that we normally average, what, guys, Corey, 7 runs a game, and we only had 2 over. So instead of 14 runs, you would say on average for the two games, you have, what, 2 runs? So
I want to say this real fast, guys. Congratulations to our sometimes colleague and our good friend of the show, East Carolina graduate Brendan Shapiro. He just texted me. He knows what I'm congratulating him for. You guys can figure it out. Congratulations, Brendan Shapiro.
Oh, okay. I think I know what that is. But anyway, that's an off-the-show kind of thing. But, you were talking about starting pitching. What about for relief pitching when you have Colemore, Bridges, you have Colemore and Bridges and Tyler Smith? I mean, there's a whole bunch of guys that are not going to be coming out of the bullpen or even starting. So is pitching, how is our pitching off just a first glance for next year?
Well, you got a CJ Mayhew coming back. And I think he got gassed at the end of the year. Like, it just seemed like he was a little bit off for the last month of the season. He looked pretty good when he showed up this weekend. But he's going to be the guy kind of leading the back end of the rotation. Garrett Saylor is there. The last couple of weeks, AJ Wilson really showed some stuff. I think they knew he had it. And it started to blossom the last couple of weeks of the year. So the key with him will be, can he consistently get right-handers out? Because with that slider, he's going to get every lefty he sees, most likely. You're going to line up pretty nicely here. And then you got a couple of true freshmen that, you know, I think Josh Groves could be something really good for this team. I could see him being a starter for this club next year. Danny Beal, you know, what Landon Ginn showed towards the end of the year after a ways off. But Groves and Beal all year, I think, kind of flew underneath the radar a little bit. But they showed some really good things throughout the course of the year. And then you have a guy like, you know, what does Jake Kuchmaner do? Like, I think that's a fascinating one to figure out. It would be he'd return for a fifth year. And he has that option if he wants it. But he, like, it was not his best outing this year. And what does he want to do moving forward? I know the team loves him. I know the program loves him. He's that type of guy where when he's in that clubhouse, it's a better clubhouse. Jake's one of the more persistent, one of the more prepared and driven guys on that pitching staff. And so I'm sure he's chomping at the bit to fix what went wrong this year. And if he can come back and fix what went haywire, then you got him back in your rotation. There are plenty of pieces there that I think will make this this pitching staff still very, very formidable in 2022, especially the bullpen. Like, there's still a ton of options down there.
Yeah, you had my mind, Corey, as far as Cooch, and very quickly, Dave, and just, you know, earlier you were talking about, you know, Bridges, Smitty, and, you know, Colemore, and everything they meant to this year's team. And obviously, like you just alluded to, you know, Cooch had a huge leadership role this year, you know, to hopefully it'll work out. He'll make the decision if it's what he deems in his best interest to come back. But for the reason you just mentioned, and with this year not going the way he would have liked, I would love to see him come back and really pitch the way he can pitch next season.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, we're talking about, you know, some of these guys who would be coming back for a fifth year that we're talking about, you know, Kuchmaner and the pitching staff, Seth Cadell is, you know, the catcher here, even his backup, Ben Newton, that'd be a fifth year for him after 2 years at JUCO. These guys also have degrees already. Like, they've accomplished graduation. Some are going for masters here. And so that's something they're also going to have to weigh, where if they're done with school but still can come back and play again, do they want to do that? Are they on scholarship to do that? Like, it's things like that, that it's more than just, you know, Kuchmaner struggling this year on the mound. He's got his degree. Like, he's set in terms of that. It's if he's going for more, if he wants to come back and hang around, there's a lot more in the decision-making for a guy like Kuchmaner and Cadell and Newton and all these guys who are fourth year juniors, say World doesn't get drafted. Like, all these guys do have that decision coming up when they have things academically set already.
No question about it. And obviously second base is going to be Connor Norby is going to be moving along. Who would play second base with him gone? I know that's early, but just out of curiosity.
It'd probably be Barini, I think, would be taken over there. Okay. And then the infield's pretty well set around him. Moylan will take over first all day, and then you still got Agnos and Giles on the left side of the diamond. So, Barini would be your second baseman. You probably have a gap to fill in center field, it sounds like, here. I think you'll have one. I hope Bryson gets drafted here. But that's where a guy like Jacob Starling will slide in. And then you still have Makarevich and Hoover out there, plus a couple of guys on the bench, like, you know, saw a little bit of Cam Klaunch this year. There's another, I'm missing another true freshman this year, and it's, this is not a good look. Riley Johnson played a ton.
That's what I was going to ask for, yeah, Riley Johnson.
The backflipper. Yeah. Backflipper, belly flopper. Yeah. I mean, he's going to see regular time in the outfield too. So yeah, the Pirates are actually going to be okay position wise, and say they do need to make some changes behind the plate. I don't know what Seth or Ben are going to be doing here. But they do have two catchers looming. Justin Wilcox and Joey Rezek are looming here. So, they have reinforcements that they're ready. That's where the program is. Like, they're bringing in some upper tier talent to fill some voids here when guys graduate, when guys get drafted. That's a sign of a powerhouse program now.
And I may have just missed it, but AMAC, obviously, you have a guy of his caliber who's so versatile that can play infield or outfield, switch it, and everything he brings.
Yeah, I think there was there was so much talking about him heading into the year, about just what he essentially forced his way into the lineup. Like, that's everything we heard about Makarevich heading into the year. And then you saw why. And now, I mean, you could put him anywhere pretty much, and he's going to do something for you. And I think now, after a full year of, seeing regular at-bats, I think his prospects only grow. And now add in probably your summer ball, I would imagine. I don't know. I have the list of who's playing summer ball where yet. But I think a guy that's had to kind of fight to get the attention when he first walked in to this clubhouse to now be an everyday guy of a top 15 program, the sky is starting to be the limit for him now. I think there can be a lot of great things that Makarevich brings to the table moving forward.
Yeah, very quickly, Dave, I know I said I was finished, but AMAC, since Corey brought up summer ball, he's the only one that I do know where he's playing. I believe he's playing down with the Wilmington Sharks. Good family friend of ours, Mark Sumner, is his host family.
Yeah, I know Zach Agnos is going up to the Cape. That's the only one I know for sure. But that, I think that the program's going to be kind of putting together a list here shortly of where all these guys are going, because they're going to start leaving here shortly to start playing summer ball.
Hey, we have a quick question from Johnny Robertson. Can we put that up on there? Then we're going to get out of here. Corey, thank you for going extra innings with us here on Extra Innings. He says, what about Carter Cunningham in the outfield next year? Any shot for him to be a contributor?
Yeah, probably. I mean, he's going to be one of the incoming class. I've mentioned with you guys a few times, I don't spend a ton of time researching like the incoming classes, but I have heard a lot about him because he played high school ball with Zach Agnos. And so there's a connection there. I think, outfield, there's going to be, kind of like what we saw this year. There are a lot of options hanging out where, Francisco was an outfielder this year. We saw Johnson a lot when Hoover was on the shelf, and we saw Starling late in the year. There's going to be a lot of chances. And as we saw with Johnson this year, true freshmen are going to, or incomers are going to get their cracks out there. And Cunningham's going to be certainly in that mix moving forward.
Before we go, guys, I want to thank, since this end, the last extra innings of the season, I want to give a shout out to Next Level Training Center. They sponsored the whole show. Thanks to Trent, Brett, Gaynell, everybody there. My son, Alexander, made All-Stars. He went to a clinic before that. They do tremendous work. They kind of took him under their wing that Sunday. NextLevelTC.com. Call them 252-756-NEXT. I know we're going to take Alex and my daughter Mackenzie there in the summertime. Give them some more work, if you will, in the off season. Also want to give a shout out to Kaz, Mark Minakazi, for PGXGloves.com. They were great to us for the PGX Player of the Week and the PGX Pitcher of the Week. Appreciate all them. And Corey, man, you've been rock solid for us all season long. You've been our starter. Appreciate it, man, for everything that you've done, for going all the way back to the beginning of this podcast, 2018. You've been always good to us, so I wanted to give everybody a shout-out, including you, for all that you've done for us for this program.
Well, gentlemen, I thank you for that. I've enjoyed it every time I've been on with you guys, and I've told you before, I'll tell you again here, I love I love what you put together here. It's something that I think this community, this fan base has been looking for, and what you guys have built, and now to the point where we're doing, you know, video calls about this yeah. every single week, and people are watching it live and then going back and watching it or listening to it and downloading it. People don't know the hustle that you guys are doing here, the behind the scenes work. But I recognize it and I applaud it. I admire it. Keep on going here, boys, because you got 81 days till football starts. So, I mean, it's you guys do awesome work, and I know it's appreciated by many of the fans around Pirate Nation. And thanks for letting me be a part of it here the last couple months.
Appreciate that, Corey. Means a lot coming from yourself, and you know, hard to believe that year six is in the books for you.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of happened both quick and slow. This year was a strange one, no question. But I'm glad we got 61 in as opposed to 17 or whatever it was in 2020. And it was another super regional run. And it was one hell of a team, one truly awesome team this year that gave us some really special moments, some special players. We're going to be talking about that game against Charlotte for a long time, I feel. And we're going to be talking about that North Carolina game for a long time that happened back in March. Just, if you still want to take some time and kind of dwell on the past weekend, go for it. Take as much time as you need. But this was another truly awesome year. And it was my privilege, because I know not everyone could get out to games this year. It was really, if you got regional tickets, that was kind of the best shot for everyone this year. And so I know more people were having to tune into me than probably they would have liked. And so it was my privilege to bring you all this team this year. It was a real special group. And thanks for being along for the ride.
And by the way, before I forget, your broadcast partner, who I love, he was the coach when I was here, Coach Gary Overton. Coach O, thank you for coming on the show, too. I know he's not here with us tonight, but he means the world to me. And I know you and a lot of people. And also want to give a shout out to Malcolm Gray, who talk about a pirate, that talk about behind the scenes. People don't know how much work he does and means a lot of the program. All the coaches, the staff behind the scenes. I know the trainers, everybody that behind the scenes that we don't give a lot of love as much as we want to. We could probably do a show every single day on ECU baseball for all the hard work, the GPA 3.69, all the folks there, community service, all that stuff that means so much to all the people in Pirate Nation. I want to give all those people a shout out as well.
Yeah. And I just want to say to this baseball team, Coach Godwin and the whole team, thanks for giving Pirate Nation something to be proud of. Football, you know, has been a struggle. It's on its way back up. We're going to be there soon, hopefully this year. Basketball kind of always is what it is. But this baseball team, for a while now, has been the shining diamond of East Carolina. And so thanks for giving us another great year where we can feel like, you know, we are the big dog in the conference and on even keel with anybody else in this area. In at least one sport, and that's baseball. So thanks to Cliff and this team for keeping that tradition going and growing.
All right, and Corey, before you go, we'll give you a chance to, what are you doing this summer? You got anything on the plans besides your new album coming out?
My album drops in August. Okay. I mean, it's. I'll notify you guys. I'm going to hire at least Bubba to be my agent. Because he's essentially been my agent for this. I am the wind at the moment here. I'm going to take a little bit of time to kind of probably unplug a little bit. As mentioned at the top of the show, I don't watch a ton of baseball once the season ends. And so I don't know how much of the World Series I'll be watching here coming up in a little bit. But I'll kind of take a step back and breathe a little bit here and see where the winds take me.
I look forward to seeing you, even though Kyle can't look for the press box. Last year, because of social distancing, I was like, it felt like I was in Aiden or Grifton or Farmville, way away from you. And I didn't even get a chance, the games that were there, like in the press box. I didn't get a chance to even talk to you because everything was so spread out.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have a normal, whatever normalcy is, in the press box again this year, this fall.
We are almost right there, aren't we, folks? Like we're right there. We're about 99% of the way there.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt. Yep. Thanks, Corey, buddy. I'll let you go. We're running way long, but appreciate you again and look forward to hopefully we have you back in the fall, maybe talk some fall ball to get Pirate Nation, the fans of this team. We'll see what kind of an early preview.
We'll have Corey on to give us a Northern Illinois football preview.
Absolutely. After a winless 2021, that's what, or 2020, that's what you're all jonesing for.
All right. Good night, gentlemen, man. Appreciate you, buddy.
Love you guys. Have a great summer. It was a pleasure.
Same, man. All right. Corey Glore, appreciate him very much. Guys, do you have anything before we go?
I kind of think I said everything I wanted to say just a minute ago with, you know, thanking this team for giving us something all to cheer about yet again.
Bubba, do you have anything?
I echo what Kyle said. I mean, you know, we're certainly spoiled as Pirate baseball fans. We all want Omaha, just like Cliff said. And it's going to happen, and we're going to keep knocking on the door, and we'll knock the door down and open it here in the next few years. There's no doubt. Who knows? Maybe next year. But 44-17, you know, and Cliff this afternoon on social media, he said obviously it's still very raw. A lot of different emotions, you know, running through my head right now. And saying goodbye to these seniors and everything that Corey mentioned. But, you know, when you take a look at it, a lot of things to be proud of, you know, on and off the field.
No doubt. And I'm going to say one final thing, and then we'll get out of here. Proud of the team. I'm proud of you, Coach Godwin. If you're John Gilbert, Ron Robinson, we thank a lot of them. Give this guy a for life. That's what he deserves. Give him another raise. Give him all the stuff that he wants with the everything the guy wants because they deserve it. So appreciate them very much for everything the coach has done, and let's give it to him, all right? I want to send a shout-out to Josh O'Neill and Josh Thomas. They just arrived home a few minutes ago. Josh, appreciate you. And Josh Thomas, man, it was great to meet you in the jungle. That was really awesome. So it's great to probably put this, but we see you obviously here each and every week in a lot of the broadcasts. So thank you very much. All right, guys, we'll get out of here. Thank you, Kyle, Bubba. Thank you to Corey, everybody for part of, again, for extra innings this season. We're going to get out of here. We'll be back next year. We'll follow it and as far as extra innings, but we'll have our regular broadcast here as well. We'll see you the next few days. In the meantime, as always, good night, everybody. Go Pirates.